I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's January 7th. Welcome to the first Real Talk MS episode of 2020, and this year, we have a lot to talk about. I do a fair amount of traveling to MS-related meetings, conferences, and events, and I always try to take a moment during the first episode of each month to let you know where I'm going to be. If I'm traveling to the city where you live, or if you're going to be attending the same conference that I'll be attending, I hope you let me know. Maybe we can find time to grab coffee or a cocktail and talk. And since this is our first episode in January, I want to let you know that I'll be attending a meeting in Washington, D.C. between January 14th and 17th. And if you happen to live in or around D.C., I hope you'll let me know. I always look forward to connecting face-to-face with Real Talk MS listeners. You can shoot me an email at john@realtalkms.com. That's JON@realtalkms.com. Or you can call the Real Talk MS listener hotline that I've set up to make it as easy as possible for us to connect. The number is area code 310-526-2283. I hope I have the chance to meet some of you face-to-face during this trip or during some of the trips to meetings and conferences that are coming up in February and March. Now, as far as this particular meeting goes, I'll be able to talk more about it later this month. But it's one that I can almost guarantee you're going to want to be particularly interested in hearing about. My guest today is Dr. Anna Kratz. Dr. Kratz is an associate professor of physical medicine and a rehabilitation and research psychologist at the University of Michigan, where she's also a member of the university's Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation. Dr. Kratz and her colleagues have developed a really interesting web-based self-guided program that's designed to help people living with MS manage symptoms like pain, fatigue, depression, and mood swings to minimize their impact on everyday quality of life. It's called My MS Toolkit, and we're going to talk with Dr. Kratz about all the details of My MS Toolkit, how and why it was developed, and what makes it such a unique online tool for people living with MS. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Anna Kratz, there are a few other things that you should know about. One of the things that we talked about last week was the decision that was issued last month by a U.S. federal appeals court declaring that the individual mandate, which was a key part of the Affordable Care Act, was unconstitutional. And the reason that this is of special importance to people affected by MS or any other chronic illness is that the Affordable Care Act specifically protects people with pre-existing medical conditions like MS and requires insurance companies to make health insurance available to them at the same rate as everyone else. Now, the first thing we need to say about this is that nothing is changing right now. When the Federal Appeals Court issued its ruling, it sent the case back to the original Federal District Court in Texas, asking that judge to determine whether the Affordable Care Act could be considered constitutionally sound once the individual mandate was deleted. Well, this is the same judge who, in a prior ruling, had already declared the Affordable Care Act to be unconstitutional in its entirety. So this past week, attorneys general representing 20 Democratic-led states, along with the U.S. House of Representatives, petitioned the United States Supreme Court to take up the case even before the district court has issued a ruling and decide this case sooner rather than later. Now, usually the Supreme Court doesn't take a case before the lower court has had an opportunity to issue a ruling, but the petitioners here are arguing that the ongoing uncertainty about the long-term viability of the Affordable Care Act is disrupting major sectors of the healthcare industry and ultimately putting patients and their care at risk. Now, it takes five Supreme Court justices to agree to hear a case on an expedited basis. And following the petitions filed by the state attorneys general and the House of Representatives, the National MS Society joined 23 other patient organizations in supporting the expedited review of this case. The patient organizations issued this statement, and I'll read it verbatim. Our organizations, representing millions of individuals and families affected by chronic and serious health conditions, are grateful for the swift action taken by 20 states, the District of Columbia, and the U.S. House of Representatives. Patients cannot afford to endure prolonged uncertainty about the long-term status of the Affordable Care Act and the critical protections it guarantees. While the ACA remains the law of the land, the December Appeals Court ruling leaves open the possibility that millions of people with pre-existing conditions will one day find themselves without access to the law's important patient protections. It is critical that the Supreme Court takes up this case for review immediately and provides a resolution to this case that threatens the foundational protections our communities rely on. And that's the end of the statement. Now, it may only be January, but this case will be one of the most important issues that we're going to face this year. It's going to have a major impact on every family in America that's affected by multiple sclerosis or any other chronic health condition. And you can be sure that we'll continue to keep you updated on all of its implications and developments as they occur. The FDA has issued a warning about a class of drug therapies called gabapentinoids. Now, that includes gabapentin, commercially known as Neurontin, and pregabalin, which is commercially known as Lyrica. The warning pointed out that using these drugs could increase the risk of serious breathing problems for people who already have poor lung function or use other drugs that depress the central nervous system. Now, while these drugs don't have FDA approval for treating MS, they're still often prescribed off-label to treat MS-related pain. So if your neurologist has previously prescribed or suggested Neurontin or another gabapentinoid, you probably want to have a conversation with them to determine whether there might be a safer treatment to help manage your MS-related pain. And I'll include a link to the official FDA warning in today's show notes. We often talk about the importance of starting disease-modifying therapy early. And if you'd like to add another bit of scientific evidence, so you'll have one more reason why you're going to want to start disease-modifying therapy following an MS diagnosis, consider this study by a team of researchers with the Allegheny Health Network Neuroscience Institute in Pennsylvania. Now, this research team looked at the impact of disease-modifying therapy on disability in a study that followed 184 people who were diagnosed with MS for up to 15 years after the initial onset of an MS symptom. And the team concluded that since the introduction of disease-modifying therapies, people living with relapsing-remitting MS experience a slower progression of disability and a better prognosis, a better clinical outcome, compared to the data sets that were compiled prior to the availability of disease-modifying therapies. Now, will disease-modifying therapies manage every MS symptom? Of course not. But can they help you preserve a better quality of life for a longer period of time? Well, a growing number of scientific studies continue to tell us that the answer is yes. And if you'd like to review this scientific study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I believe in evidence-based science. And I think that it makes sense to spend a minute talking not about specific results, but about the science itself. We often talk about the evidence that's collected and analyzed during controlled clinical trials. Now, clinical trials in MS try to answer questions about the effectiveness of a particular therapy involving people with very specific disease activity, age range, and other characteristics over a short period of time. But after the FDA or European Medicines Agency approves a therapy based upon the outcome of a clinical trial, it leaves us with important questions that remain unanswered. Questions like, who would benefit most from this specific therapy? Or what are the long-term benefits and safety issues associated with this particular therapy? Trying to answer these kinds of questions is leading to increased efforts in tracking health experiences of groups of people or cohorts living with MS in the real world over time. There are actually thousands of people being followed in various types of MS cohorts around the world, and these observational studies can answer important questions about factors that predict the course of MS, the long-term effectiveness of therapies, the benefits of rehabilitation, and other subjects. But the type and quality of the data collected in observational studies varies significantly. And the data that is collected can be recorded and analyzed differently. And now these differences make these observational studies prone to what's called research bias. And research bias refers to unintended factors that can affect results. The bottom line here is that the results of these observational studies aren't always accepted by regulatory agencies and healthcare providers. So in 2018, the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in Multiple Sclerosis hosted a workshop to develop recommendations to better standardize data collection and enhance the ability to answer these important questions about MS and the optimal care for people living with MS in real-world observational studies. The result of that workshop is a recently published paper by a team of renowned MS experts titled Leveraging Real-World Data to Investigate Multiple Sclerosis Disease Behavior, Prognosis, and Treatment. The paper describes the types of data collection that are ongoing right now, including patient registries, electronic medical records, MRI and other imaging, biospecimens like blood samples, and wearable sensors, and then explores how to integrate all these sources of data so that they can be compared and shared. The authors of the paper offer recommendations for improving the quality of real-world data and how that data can be leveraged to increase our understanding of MS. Among the recommendations was standardizing data to improve their compatibility, developing ways to incorporate additional data like patient-reported outcomes, biomarkers, and other information, improving the reporting of studies so that every study follows existing guidelines, making the capture of comprehensive data part of routine MS care, developing a searchable catalog of existing cohorts, and growing the workforce of data scientists, biostatisticians, and epidemiologists so that these rich data collections can be mined properly. One effort that reflects these recommendations is already underway. The National MS Society is funding the development of a searchable metadata catalog of every North American cohort study, and this effort could even be expanded in the future to include other cohorts beyond those in North America. By ensuring that observational studies provide accurate, reliable data that can be compared, shared, and analyzed, MS research scientists will be able to incorporate the real-world health experiences of people living with MS into finding the answers to the questions that ensure that each person living with MS can receive the best possible clinical treatment, and that is a worthwhile goal. If you'd like to review the details of this paper, you'll find a link in today's show notes. And when we talk about MS care, self-care should be an important part of that conversation. My MS Toolkit is a new web-based self-care tool developed by Dr. Anna Kratz and her team at the University of Michigan. We're going to get into what My MS Toolkit is and what makes it an important tool when it comes to your self-care. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Dr. Anna Kratz. Dr. Anna Kratz is an associate professor of physical medicine and rehabilitation and research psychologist at the University of Michigan, where she's also a member of the university's Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation. Dr. Kratz and her colleagues have developed MyMS Toolkit, a free web-based self-guided program designed to help people living with MS manage symptoms like pain, fatigue, depression, and mood swings to minimize their impact on quality of life. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Kratz.
Thanks for having me.
I know that I just gave the shortest possible explanation of what MyMS Toolkit is all about. I'm hoping you might give us a more complete explanation of what the toolkit is and why you and your colleagues decided to create it.
Sure. Well, I think I can kind of answer both of those questions by talking about how we designed MyMS Toolkit. The genesis of this website started years ago when my mentor at the University of Washington, her name is Dawn Eady, started thinking about how we could improve access to care for people with MS, specifically for the kinds of therapy that health psychologists and rehab psychologists provide. And she started developing telephone-based cognitive behavioral therapy for people with MS and then studying, you know, how effective those treatments are. And so basically she just took what we would do in the clinic and translated it to a telephone-based therapy. And then I have another mentor here at the University of Michigan. His name is Dave Williams. And what he's done in another condition, so in fibromyalgia, was he took what we do in the clinic, and he tried to put a lot of that information and skills practice onto the web. And so this was, I think, in the late 90s or early 2000s, created a website called FibroGuide. And this was, of course, for people with fibromyalgia. But it provided all kinds of information for those patients on what they could do to manage their own symptoms. So I have these two mentors, you know, one with a telephone-based therapy and one with a web-based therapy. The telephone-based therapy is specifically for MS. And I thought, well, could we kind of combine these two approaches, you know, all the content that's specific for people with MS with the format, the web-based format of presenting this information and these skills that we know can help people and make it even more accessible than a telephone therapy, which is great. You know, people don't have to come into the clinic, but it still requires, you know, making an appointment with a therapist who's providing the telephone therapy. It still requires that therapists are available versus this web-based approach where you can put a lot of what we know is helpful for people right there on the website. People can access it whenever it's convenient for them. You know, you don't have to worry about insurance covering your sessions. You don't have to worry about necessarily even putting on your daytime clothes if you don't want to. So, you know, and here I live in Michigan. If it's snowing, you don't have to try to get out. So we were really happy to sort of take the information that had been developed for people with MS, that had been developed for telephone therapy, and with the help of a grant from the Department of Defense, create this website, you know, as a kind of a first step to try to increase even more people's access to this kind of information.
Well, you mentioned a couple of things that are kind of worth highlighting. First, the fact that this was supported by a grant from the Department of Defense, and not everyone living with MS knows that the Department of Defense has a specific research program for MS, where they tend to focus on more cutting-edge technologies, new approaches to things that are a little outside of the box, because there are a significant number of U.S. veterans who are living with multiple sclerosis.
Yeah, I think people are really surprised to hear how much health research is funded by the DOD. And it's true, there are many veterans living with MS. In fact, I worked at the Seattle VA as an intern, and that was those were some of the first patients that I had with MS were in the VA. So yes. And I think it's great because it's a federal, you know, it's a federal agency that's really helping to, their goal is to improve not just the health and the well-being and the functioning of veterans and service members, but also just of the population as a whole. So, you know, this is to benefit everyone. And actually, this is, you know, you bring up veterans, and this is not the first website to provide this kind of information. It's my understanding that similar kind of web-based interventions have been developed for people with, like, diabetes and other conditions. And I think, interestingly, those tend to be within the VA. So this kind of technology is, I think, a little more popular and accessible within the VA. But this is obviously a website that's available to anyone.
You know, the other thing that I heard you mention was that that originally one of your mentors did this phone-based intervention that was using cognitive behavioral therapy. I know the toolkit is also based on cognitive behavioral therapy. What does that mean, and what makes that an important choice?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Yes, the original telephone intervention that my MS toolkit is based on, as well as the content in my MS toolkit, are both based on CBT treatments, cognitive behavioral therapy. And CBT is really based on a framework where a person's well-being, their functional ability, is really related to how they think, how they feel, the kinds of behaviors they engage in, the kind of social interactions that they have, and that some of the behaviors and thoughts and emotions and interactions that people have can be unhelpful. They can be unhelpful in terms of how they feel physically, like what their symptoms are, whether they have pain, whether their fatigue is really bad. These thoughts and feelings and behaviors can be unhelpful in terms of a person's social relationships and how they're feeling emotionally. And really, these interventions, CBT interventions, are we try to intervene and help people adopt more helpful behaviors and thoughts and ways of interacting. And maybe the easiest way to sort of convey what CBT is through an example. And I guess, you know, it's the holidays are coming up. Everybody's extra busy now. And I think a good example would be sort of like a typical patient who has MS and who right now at this time of year, like everyone else, is feeling, you know, extra busy. There may be extra pressures on them. You know, there's socializing going on that isn't part of normal daily life outside of the holidays. And so, you know, what we hear a lot of from people is, like, for example, that they're just sort of stressed and pressured to do all these things. So, like, picture a mom, maybe a working mom with MS, who feels like she's running around trying to get ready for the holidays. Her fatigue is higher than normal. Maybe her pain is worse than normal. She's feeling a little more depressed than normal. And she knows she's kind of overdoing it, trying to do too much. But, you know, she has these thoughts about maybe like what it is to be a good mom or a good wife or a good employee around the holidays. And those thoughts are reinforcing her overdoing it. Maybe she has days where she goes way beyond what she knows she should be doing. So CBT would help address both the overdoing it, like trying to get the person to think more about pacing their activities either across a day or across a week, whatever they need to do to avoid kind of overdoing it, while at the same time kind of addressing some of those thoughts that make that person feel like they have to keep overdoing it, they have to keep kind of pushing through and, you know, not taking good care of themselves, both physically and emotionally. So that's one example. Or, you know, somebody who's maybe because of mobility or balance issues, you know, can't help decorate the house like they used to and are just sort of feeling really bad about that. You know, what are some of the ways that we can challenge the thoughts and the feelings that go with that, those changes in ability, to help a person feel better, to help a person function better physically, emotionally and socially.
You know, I understand that when you created my MS toolkit, you included input from 4 people who were living with MS. What did you see as the value of including people with MS in the development process?
Oh, my goodness. Well, they were almost invaluable, I think, is a good way to describe their contribution. You know, we knew from the start that whatever we created, we needed it to be accessible in terms of it being relevant to people, accessible in terms of it being understandable to people. You know, one of the things about CBT, and whether you're doing it in a clinic or you're doing it over the telephone, is that a lot of times it takes a lot of back and forth explaining. You know, as a clinician, I might explain what it means to sort of challenge an unhelpful thought. And then the patient might ask, well, I don't really understand what you mean by that. And then I can explain, maybe in different words, what I'm talking about, what kind of skill I'm trying to get them to adopt, how I'm thinking that, you know, maybe they can sort of change the way they're thinking about things to feel better. One of the challenges with moving CBT onto a website is how do you make these concepts and these skills, these ideas accessible to somebody who's just reading it for themselves? You know, they don't have the opportunity necessarily to ask questions. So we wanted to make sure that we were talking about things that were important to people with MS. We wanted to make sure that we were talking about these things in a way that people could understand just by using the website by themselves. Some of the things that patients said that were really, really helpful. So we had this group of 4 people, like you said, 2 women and 2 men at varying stages of some of them had kind of newer diagnoses. Some of them had been diagnosed with MS for quite some time. And one of the things that they said, which I think was a really great tip, was that MS is not, you know, it's not an individual condition. It's something that affects the whole family, the whole social network. And so one of the things that we did at the prompting of our stakeholder group was to add some content for the family members who are no doubt going to need to support people as they make changes. You know, so one example is we're trying to get people to have better sort of sleep habits and prioritize sleep. Well, you know, sleep is a social activity. If you are trying to sleep and somebody in your house is up and making a lot of noise or something, it makes it hard to have some behavior change. Also, things like improving physical activity, trying to be more active in your daily life to the extent that you can. You know, we want the families to maybe benefit from that themselves by being a little more active or sleeping better, doing some relaxation activities to kind of manage stress, but also, you know, to help support the person as they work to make some changes to improve their lives.
I understand my MS toolkit is available for anyone to access. Is that correct?
Yeah. So anybody who wants to check it out can just go to mymstoolkit.com. And it's all there. It's a very self-guided kind of resource. There are some obvious places to start. Thankfully, the place to start is a little tab that says Getting Started, and it kind of orients the user to what the toolkit's about, how they might sort of navigate the rest of the toolkit. The toolkit is split up into these different steps, so there are 9 different steps, starting with Getting Started. Then an obvious next place might be going to the step called Goal Setting, and that will just help the person sort of reflect on what they want to get out of using the toolkit. There are, and then from there, there are steps on relaxation, energy management, and that's really focused at fatigue and pain and sort of preventing those boom and bust activity fluctuations. There's a step on working with thoughts, and that's what I've been talking about in terms of having unhelpful thoughts and trying to challenge them. There's a session on managing emotions and kind of stress and the strong emotions that come with stress. A step on being active, and I will say a lot of people have a reaction to that because they just think we're going to tell them to exercise more, and I think that is good, but I think just trying to be as active as you can is what we're really sort of emphasizing there. We have a session or a step on communication. Communication is so important. How do you communicate your needs to your social network? I think one of the things we see is people not knowing how to ask for help, or, you know, knowing that it's okay to ask for help when it's needed. So we have a session, a step on communication, and then we have a whole step that's just on sleep, because sleep is so important to managing all of our symptoms. So, you know, we have these 9 steps. You can start at the getting started at mymstoolkit.com. And there's a little bit more information there about our team and some other resources that kind of go beyond what the toolkit can offer, including links to other sites and other resources.
Well, it sounds like it's awfully full-featured in its current state, but I'm wondering what's next for the toolkit. What do you have in mind?
Yeah, so we do have a lot in mind for the toolkit. A lot of it actually did come from those stakeholders, those 4 people with MS who helped us develop this. And they gave us feedback that we've always wanted to pursue if we could get some additional resources to do some more work on the site. One of the pieces of feedback that we really took to heart is that even though we worked really hard to make MyMS Toolkit accessible and understandable, we can still do a lot better. So if you look at MyMS Toolkit, you know, it's visually engaging. It's all split up into little sections, which we hope will help people sort of work through each piece, piece by piece. But I think we could do a better job of making the language a little simpler, of making the text less complex, less text, less words on a page. How can we convey these thoughts to people so they're really easily sort of, you know, absorbed and understood? The other thing is that we'd really like to turn this into an app, and this was something that the stakeholders thought would be really nice, sort of like a toolkit that you can keep in your pocket. and part of that would be the ability for the people who use the toolkit to sort of track what they're doing. Right now, the toolkit doesn't have that capacity to sort of track your symptoms over time, to maybe visualize which kind of changes in behaviors are having a positive effect for a person. So we have a lot of ideas for both making the toolkit easier to use and then giving it some more capacity in terms of people being able to have a tracking ability within the app.
Sounds like you have some very big plans ahead, and that's great to hear. Before I let you go, I'm wondering if we can shift gears just a little bit, and maybe you can tell us what the University of Michigan's Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation is all about.
Yeah, well, this is a very large institute with over 500 health researchers here at the University of Michigan, and we span all different kinds of disciplines, so, you know, surgeons to social scientists, and a big focus of the IHPI is actually on healthcare policy. So this is actually not something, I'm more on the innovation side. IHPI, innovation is the last word, but there's a ton of resources and a ton of work going on here in terms of policy. And this has everything to do with, legislation in terms of healthcare, of helping us to influence healthcare coverage for different kinds of conditions and treatments. I could see how the resources available at IHPI would be super helpful when issues come up about things like rehabilitation care coverage. You know, there's changes in compensation and reimbursement for different kinds of therapies that people with MS really benefit from. And IHPI really exists to sort of use evidence and use research to try to inform policy so that policy isn't just sort of made off of people's opinions, but is made off of good evidence for what's good for people who are benefiting, hopefully, from healthcare and the policies that support it.
That certainly is important work, and I appreciate the policy work that's being done, but certainly also the innovation side, which is which my MS toolkit kind of represents a resource that I think is just so important, and it's wonderful that it's readily available. I'll be sure to include a link to my MS toolkit in today's show notes. And I want to just say thank you for what you have developed so far. Thank you for your commitment to continue developing that. We'll look forward to seeing that app in the future. And thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me today.
Well, I thank you for helping get the word out about this resource. I really appreciate it.
This week's episode of Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. Now, if you have a friend or family member who might also enjoy listening to the podcast, you can share this episode with them by suggesting they point their web browser to realtalkms.com/123. It's realtalkms.com/123. And you'll find that link in today's show notes so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or text. Please don't forget to visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free RealTalk MS app to your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the easiest way for you to connect to the podcast. The app will automatically download the latest episode of RealTalk MS. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. So I hope you'll take a moment and download the app today. And remember, if you have an Amazon Echo or Echo Dot at home, well, you can just say, Alexa, enable the Real Talk MS podcast. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.